No, no, mine's not, mine ringing. I'm quite comfortable with that one.
Is it just one?
I've got one.
Okay, there you go.
Call this meeting to order, of course, and this is a special council meeting to deal with the presentation by administration and the consultant relative to the development charges, the 5-year review, and they'll be dealing with the background study and also the bylaw that should be coming forward thereafter. I would ask members of council, had anyone any conflicts of interest they wish to declare at this time? Seeing none, we'll have that so noted, and of course, normal procedure will apply if you find yourself during the course of this meeting to be in conflict. Having said that, I'll turn it over to our planner, Rebecca, to take us through this, would you please?
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. In May of this year, Council approved the selection of Watson and Associates to undertake the mandatory 5-year review of the development charges for the town. The current bylaw will expire on November 8th of 2014, and it's necessary to hold this public meeting to present the background study and obtain public comments. The bylaw is proposed to be adopted at the meeting September 22nd. Comments received at this public meeting will be considered and incorporated as necessary into the study and bylaw. I would like to introduce Dan Wilson. He's the project manager from Watson and Associates Economists. Dan will provide an overview of the development charges study and proposed bylaw.
Thank you. So the purpose of development charges is to recover the capital costs associated with growth within the town. And growth is made up of both residential growth and non-residential growth. So basically, capital costs, in addition to what would normally be constructed as part of a subdivision, so the internal roads, water, wastewater, water, sidewalks, streetlights, and so on, is typically considered to be something that is growth-related, either fully growth-related or partially growth-related. And municipalities are empowered to impose these charges through the Development Charges Act. This is a public meeting that is required under the Development Charges Act. Prior to Council considering a DC bylaw, the background study was to be prepared and made available to the public a minimum of 2 weeks before the meeting. The public meeting is today, and it is to provide for a review of the DC study as well as to receive input from the public on the proposed policies and charges. In terms of the study process, we started the process by doing a growth forecast, looking at both the residential and non-residential growth anticipated over the forecast period. We had detailed discussions with staff regarding the future needs to service this growth. We had policy review and discussions with staff as well as part of this process. We conducted a council workshop on August 19th. Also on August 19th, we had a stakeholder workshop where we discussed the proposed policies and rates with the development community. We released the development charge background study on August 25th. Today is September 8th, where we're conducting the public meeting, and I believe the current proposed date to consider a bylaw for adoption is September 22nd. This flowchart represents a high-level summary of how we calculate development charges. So I'll go through it at a fairly high level, and if there's any questions, we can go through it in a little bit more detail. It starts off with the anticipated development within the town, and like I said earlier, it's the residential and non-residential growth forecast. So we're looking at the amount of growth, the type of growth, and the location of growth throughout the community. From there, we're looking at the estimated increase in need for service. So what services will be included in the calculation? What's considered a development charge versus a local service, which would be more of a developer responsibility? What are the ineligible services? And what are the 10-year average level of service amounts? So part of the calculation is determining what the 10-year average level of service was going back 10 years from today. And that becomes the basis for establishing the maximum amount that can go into the charge itself. So we spent a lot of time with staff determining that 10-year average level of service, and obviously through the calculations that set the maximum amount that can go into the charge. In terms of identifying needs to accommodate growth, there are certain costs that are excluded from the calculation. Items such as parkland acquisition costs, town hall construction costs, cultural and entertainment costs, solid waste costs, hospital costs, any vehicles with a useful life below 7 years, and computer equipment. Those are all deemed to be ineligible costs, and therefore cannot be included as part of the calculation of the charge. From there, once we have the DC needs by service, we have to look at that yellow area in the middle of the chart where we have various deductions that have to take place within the calculation itself. We have to be mindful of any grants, subsidies, or other contributions that may be available for a project-specific basis, and they have to be deducted from the calculation. There's a 10% statutory deduction for certain soft costs like parks and recreation, where whatever we deem to be the net DC eligible cost, we have to take an additional 10% off the calculation. There's a deduction for uncommitted excess capacity. If there's some excess capacity in existing assets and it has not been determined to be paid for through growth, then it becomes a deduction in the calculation. And then there's the benefit to the existing community. So to the point where a project is going to benefit the existing community, that becomes a deduction in the calculation. So we're left with that net DC eligible capital cost amount, taking the DC needs by service and subtracting these various deductions. Once we have that net DC amount, we compare that to the growth projections to determine the charge itself. So the residential charge is more on a per residential unit basis, where a non-residential charge is typically more on a per square foot basis. And we're going to see a little bit more of how that charge is calculated in a few minutes. I mentioned the growth forecast. We have a demographics team at our company that specializes in doing the growth forecast for DC studies. They looked at the 2011 census data. They looked at historical building permit activity, and they had various discussions with town staff in developing the growth forecast. They looked at two different forecast periods, a 10-year forecast period and a more of a build-out forecast period that went to 2031. This chart represents the high-level summary of that growth forecast. So it shows that the township-wide population is expected to go from approximately 22,000 net population now, or 8,300 units, to approximately 24,300 net population, or 9,377 units by 2024. By 2031, it's expected to go up to 25,860 net population, or 10,077 units. You can see in the distribution in the bottom left of the screen that most of that growth is obviously in urban areas. From a non-residential perspective, we're expecting employment areas to increase from approximately 4,116 currently to 4,656 by 2024, and then increasing to 5,035 by 2031. And that becomes important because we use employee per square foot estimates to determine the estimated total gross floor area to be included in the charge itself from a non-residential perspective. So that results in an increase in employment over the next 10 years of approximately 540, which translates into roughly 405,300 in terms of per square foot additions from a non-residential perspective. And then Also on the 18-year or build-out perspective, that's 919 employment increase or roughly 692,000 square foot of additional building space. This chart shows the residential growth forecast, both from a historical perspective and a forward projecting outlook. So you'll see the black represents the historical activity within the town, where building permits from a housing unit perspective average just over 100 units per year. Going forward, it's expected to fluctuate somewhere between 90 and 110 units per year, so staying fairly consistent with that historical average. You'll see from the color coding on the right-hand side that it's predominantly low density with some medium and high density as well in each year. Moving forward to the increase in need for service, we looked at a 10-year forecast period for administration services and parks and recreation, mainly because the Development Charges Act restricts you to a 10-year forecast maximum for those areas. For the other areas, transportation, fire, police, water, wastewater, we looked at the full build-out perspective, which was roughly 18 years. So it gives you a basis for which growth projection were used based on the particular service areas. Looking at the capital needs identified within the report itself, a total of $60.5 million in capital projects were identified, and that's total capital cost. Roughly $24.7 million or 40.9% of that is shown to be recovered through development charges. Roughly 53% is considered benefit to the existing community, which would be paid for through other means such as taxation, water rates, wastewater rates. 6% or $3.6 million is shown as other contributions, and 0.1% represents the statutory 10% deduction allocation that we were required to make. Looking at the $24.7 million based on a service-by-service perspective, roughly $20.2 million of that, or 82%, is to be recovered from the residential development charge calculation. $4.5 million, or 18%, is to be recovered from the non-residential charge. And that's determined based on the growth projection identified through the growth forecast, where we have services such as roads and administration being distributed based on population to employment projections, where fire is more based on the area projection versus land area projection from a res and non-res perspective. You'll see that most of the costs identified within the DC study are water, wastewater, and roads related projects. 24% representing transportation, 33% representing water, and 38% representing wastewater. And then there's a minor aspect there for fire protection and administration studies, representing 4% and 1% respectively. But in a whole, basically water, wastewater, and transportation or roads represents the majority of the calculation. Looking at the calculated charges going forward, we've broken down residential into single and semi-detached, apartments with two or more bedrooms, apartments with bachelor or one bedroom, other multiples, and then we have special care or special dwelling units. So comparing the anticipated charge or the proposed charge to your current charge, looking at the single and semi-detached line, it's totaling an estimated charge of $12,666 per unit. Your current charge is roughly $10,532, which is an increase of just over $2,100. When it comes to apartments and other multiples, the charges are actually going down. In the past, you had one charge for apartments, where now we're considering the fact that there should be less of a charge for the bachelor and one bedroom in comparison to the larger apartments. So we're showing that as part of the distribution. But if we compare your current charge to the proposed charge, apartments two or more bedrooms we're calculating at $7,371 per unit, where your current charge is $9,441. And that same $9,441 is currently being charged to the bachelor and one bedroom apartments, where we're calculating roughly $5,633. So in those two cases, you're seeing a 22% and a 40% reduction from an apartment's perspective. And that's predominantly because we do the distribution from a residential perspective based on our estimated persons per unit for those actual areas. And it's showing a distribution or a shifting towards the single and semi-detached dwelling unit in comparison to the apartment units. Other multiples, we're showing a charge of 8,768 proposed, where your current charge is 9,929. So that's showing a decrease of $1,161 or 12%. So really from a residential perspective, it's the single and semi-detached charge that's going up, and the other apartment and other multiple charges are going down. From a non-residential perspective, the current charge, as you know, is zero, as non-residential development charges are exempt within the town. What you see before you is a charge based on full cost recovery. So it's showing a cost per square foot of $6.60. So that would be to recover the full non-residential amounts over the anticipated forecast periods for non-residential. So obviously it means going from having no residential, no non-residential charge to having a non-residential charge going forward. We've also included separate charges for wind turbines and telecommunication towers, as well as solar farms. And we're going to talk about the actual distribution of that going forward, but those are new charges that were not in your current development charge bylaw. At the bottom of the charge sheet, you'll see that there's two exemptions from the charges shown within the charts. There are property roll numbers assessed under the Malden Sewage Project that have a reduced DC charge, and that's a carry forward from your current bylaw. As well, there's an agreement with the Boblo Island development where the first 145 units shall not pay development charges, and I believe you're getting close to that amount now. Comparing, if you were to go to the proposed rates based on a survey looking at your current rate as well as neighboring municipalities, this is the residential DC comparison, where you see your current charge in blue, where you look at your current charge along with the education charge, puts you in the ninth position in the survey itself, totaling $10,986. If you were to go to the proposed charge, which is shown in the red, you would jump up a few spots past Tecumseh and LaSalle, and then you would total $13,120 when you include the education development charges. So staying relatively the same position, you're in the middle of the pack in terms of comparing yourself to the neighboring municipalities. Looking at commercial and industrial, this is the commercial slide. The blue represents your current charge, which is obviously zero at this point, where you have an exemption from a commercial standpoint. If you were to implement the $6.60 per square foot, that would put you at the top of the survey. So that would put you higher than any of the neighboring municipalities shown within the survey itself. We're going to talk about that $6.60 and possible scenarios around that in a future slide. But that's where you would stand if you were to charge the full rates and basically have development charges pay for the full amount of anticipated development related costs going forward. The next slide is industrial DCs. So the same type of thing, where you currently have no charge, as industrial DCs are exempt. The proposed rate at $6.60 would put you at the top of the survey as well. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. In terms of policies, there are a number of policies built into the background study and the proposed bylaw that we can discuss today. In terms of applicability and timing, we're recommending a townwide charge at this point, water and wastewater based on urban serviced areas, but there's not to be considered in any area-specific charges at this point. Development charges are calculated and payable at the time of building permit issuance, which is very similar to what your current bylaw stipulates. And the town may enter into an agreement to accelerate or defer payments based on the specific needs of a development agreement. So again, that was something that you could do based on the current bylaw. In terms of DC exemptions, the Act provides mandatory or statutory exemptions that you must include in your bylaw, as well as the ability to provide your own non-statutory exemptions. So we're going to talk about each one of those separately, but the key here is to identify the fact that when you're providing a non-statutory exemption, typically it should be based on a certain class of development. So you could do it based on the use, so places of worship, farm buildings as an example, by geographic area, so you could decide not to charge development charges in a certain area, by development type, so you could provide a full or partial exemption to non-residential as an example, or by service exemption, so you could decide not to charge the parks and recreation fee to certain areas as an example. So those are all ways in which you can have a non-statutory charge. But the key here is you're treating everybody equally within the bylaw itself. So developer A versus developer B coming in to get a building permit and pay a development charge, you're treating each one of them equally. And there's a provision in the Municipal Act, section 106 of the Municipal Act, with respect to bonusing restrictions. And it says, a municipality shall not assist directly or indirectly, any manufacturing business or other industrial commercial enterprise through granting a bonus for that purpose. And it's our belief that that bonusing provision of the Municipal Act restricts the ability to provide exemptions on a case-by-case basis. Basically, it's saying you must treat these companies or these businesses equally, or you'll be in non-compliance with this bonusing restriction of the Municipal Act. So what we're suggesting is any type of restriction or any type of exemption you want to provide for, we should identify it in the bylaw itself so that everybody's treated equally. If you do decide to provide a non-statutory exemption, basically it's a loss in revenue to the town that has to be funded through other sources. So say, as an example, you decided to partially exempt non-residential development charges, as an example. Whatever that translates into in terms of lost money going to the DC Reserve Fund has to be made up for by other sources of funding, such as taxation, water rates, wastewater rates. So basically, what it is you're not allowed to take an exemption and pay for it by another type of development. So you can't exempt non-res development and pay for it through residential development. That's prohibited from the Development Charges Act. So when it comes down to it, you need to fund non-statutory exemptions through other sources. So we can talk about that and the related impact later on in the presentation. But we did provide for a few, obviously we provided for the statutory exemptions as part of the bylaw, and there's a few minor non-statutory exemptions provided for as well. But if there's any other exemptions to be provided for, we need to reflect them in the bylaw itself before it's passed. In terms of the statutory exemptions that you're required to put into the bylaw, the first one relates to industrial additions up to and including 50% of the gross floor area of the building. So if an industrial building is expanded by up to 50% of its existing gross floor area, then that expansion is exempt from development charges. So that's a statutory exemption. You must include that as part of the approved bylaw. The second one is land used for a municipal or school board or education purposes. So you can't charge a municipality or a school board development charges going forward. And the third one relates to residential development. So if residential development results in only the enlargement of an existing dwelling unit or the creation of up to two additional dwelling units from an existing unit, then they're exempt from development charges as well. So those three specific areas have been included in the proposed bylaw as statutory exemptions. At this point, we've included three non-statutory exemptions. So these are exemptions that are at the discretion of council. We've included one for places of worship, churchyard, or cemeteries. Non-residential farm buildings constructed for bona fide farm uses, and a building or structure used as community use owned by a non-profit corporation. So these are very typical non-statutory exemptions that you see across the province. So it's not unusual to see these items. If you were to provide some other type of exemption, such as some type of non-residential exemption, it would have to be included in this section as well. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. When it comes to DC credits, we've included a provision in the bylaw that allows the municipality to enter into an agreement with the developer with respect to accelerating projects within the development charge study. So say as an example, a developer wanted to proceed with a development earlier than what the town had implied within forecasting and budgeting forecasts. If that is the case, you can enter into an agreement with the developer to accelerate the timing of a project if the developer would front-end the cost of that project. And then basically the developer would be paid back through the use of development charge credits. So when they get to the point where they are getting building permits and paying development charges, a credit would be calculated so that they're not paying the full amount of the DC, so that eventually they'd be paid back the amount owed to them for front-ending that capital work. So it's a very common provision within the bylaw, and it just allows you the opportunity to have discussions with developers around timing. We also have a provision in the bylaw for redevelopment credits. You did have a provision in your current bylaw, but through discussions with staff, we've changed it somewhat from the current wording. So what this is it's recognizing that former buildings, whether they were demolished or converted from a previous use, had an existing provision allocated to them in that they've already paid development charges. So if something is demolished and reconstructed, if you're paying another full development charges, it's basically double counting the development charge on that specific property. So normally a credit is equal to, and it depends on whether you're changing use or not from residential to non-residential or vice versa, but if your previous use of your property was residential and you're converting to non-residential, the DC owing would be based on the non-residential use, but you get a credit based on the formal residential use or the former residential use. So it allows the opportunity to show the fact that a DC was paid for on that property, and it results in a credit for that given property. Where your current bylaw did not stipulate, we're suggesting that a time period be put in place from the time of change of use or the time of demolish to the time of redevelopment. Currently, staff have to go back an infinite number of years to determine if there was something on a given piece of property to determine if a credit is owing. And typically what we see in municipalities in Ontario is there's a fairly defined time limit that is usually between 3 and 5 years, so which basically stipulates that if you demolish a building, you have that 3 to 5 year window to redevelop to get the credit. But if you're beyond that window, you no longer get the DC credit. So through discussions with council at the workshop and through discussions with staff, what we've come up with in the proposed bylaw is that it should be somewhat different for the downtown area versus outside the downtown area. So what we've stipulated in the bylaw is if you're within the downtown area, you have 36 months from the time of change of use or the time of demolishment to get to the building permit stage in order to be granted that credit. Outside the downtown, it's been extended to 60 months. So this is suggesting that you don't want development stalling in the downtown area. So you're accelerating the timing, and that if you want the credit, it has to be 3 years within the downtown area, or within 5 years outside the downtown area. So that's something that's different from your current bylaw, but we're suggesting you insert those timing restrictions within your proposed bylaw. The next policy is indexing. So the Development Charge Act provides for the indexing of charges on an annual basis in accordance with the StatsCan quarterly construction price statistics. So this allows to adjust, because when we do a DC background study, and in your case, the town's DC background study is in $2014, which means every capital cost within the background study is in $2014. So as you go forward, obviously, year by year, the cost of construction goes up. So in order to keep your rates in pace with the increasing cost of construction, the DC Act allows you to index your rates from year to year. So what we're suggesting is that staff be allowed to index annually based on the prescribed index. There are two options within the Development Charges Act: mandatory indexing and discretionary indexing. The discretionary indexing would require staff to come to council every year to get approval to index, where the mandatory indexing just requires staff to do it at a certain point every year without council authorization. So we're suggesting the mandatory indexing, which is in line with your current bylaws. So that's something that's been currently being done, and we're suggesting you continue with that process going forward. I mentioned the new policy area within the rates themselves. We've set rates for wind turbines, transmission towers, and solar farms. And the thought here, and this is a calculation we've done in multiple areas across the province, is that only certain services are impacted by this type of development. In particular, we're saying roads or transportation services, fire protection, police, and administration. A transmission tower should not have to pay for a parks and recreation fee or a water fee, as an example, because they're not really specific to that type of development. So we set the rates for wind turbines, transmission towers, and solar farms based on the combined cost of the individual fees for transportation, fire, police, and administration, which is a common theme in terms of calculating these rates across the province. From a wind turbine and transmission tower point of view, it's been treated more like a residential charge, where it's going to be based on a per wind turbine or per transmission tower, similar to a residential charge is on a per unit basis, where a solar farm charge is more based on the square footage of the panels themselves, so it's more like a non-residential charge per square foot. I mentioned the ability to add other non-statutory exemptions to the bylaw. Currently, the way the bylaw is written, I think you're staying fairly competitive on a residential perspective in having your rate go up to just over $12,000, $12,600. Obviously, from a non-residential perspective, you're going to the top of the survey for $6.60 per square foot. So one thing for consideration to council is a potential phase-in or exemption of non-residential charges. So I ran a few scenarios here just to give you an idea of what the impact would be. Just given the fact that, remember on a previous slide, I mentioned that if you have one of these phase-ins or exemptions, it's a loss in revenue, which means you need to make up that revenue from another source. So this chart shows some potential scenarios. Say, for example, the first line is no exemption or phase-in, obviously has no impact on other sources from a growth perspective. The second line shows no non-residential DCs in 2014. So under that scenario, you're given a window from November 9th to December 31st, where you're not going to charge the non-residential GC as a window of opportunity to allow current applicants to get through the process. And then January 1st, you would start charging the $6.60 inflated based on indexing. In that case, you would have to come up with roughly $44,583 of lost revenue for those 2 months that you weren't charging the non-residential charge. That's an estimate based on anticipated growth within the town for that given period. Some of the other examples, say you wanted to extend that, instead of if to the end of December isn't enough for the current applicants, maybe you wanted to extend that to July 1st, 2015. So again, that's saying that you would not charge any non-res DCs from November 9th right through to June 30th, 2015, and then July 1st you would start charging the charge. And then again, that gives a wider opportunity for the non-residential people to prepare for that charge that is coming into account. You would have to come up with the same $44,583 in 2014, but then you'd have to come up with an additional $133,000 and change in 2015 to come up with that half year of lost revenue from not charging non-residential DCs. So you can see how this is going in terms of the more exemptions you offer, the more impact there is on other sources of revenue. The next one down, no DC in 2014, no non-res DC in 2014, and then say you decide to phase it in over 2 years. So That situation would have no DCs up to December 31st, 2014. January 1st, you would start charging half of the charge, so $3.30 per square foot. And then January 1st of next year, you'd go up to the full $6.60. So it's phasing in that non-residential charge over a couple of years. You'll see that one represents the same $178,000 over the 5-year forecast period. The next one is over 3 years. So that in that case, you would pay 1/3 of the $6.66 in year one, 2/3 in year two, 3/3 in year three. And that's, again, assuming no non-residential DCs in 2014 as well. And then I did those same 2-year and 3-year phase-ins based on a July 1st implementation of non-res as well. So you can see it, we're getting up to over $400,000 in additional revenue to be made up once we get to the July 1st non-res phase-in with a 3-year phase-in after that. You get to the $445,000 total impact over 4 years. The last one is put on there. It's not a phase-in, it's more of an exemption. And I believe council has a resolution in place right now that says that you would consider a 50% non-residential exemption going forward. So if we've calculated the charge to be $6.60 per square foot, what this is saying is for the entire forecast period, you would charge half of that. So $3.30 per square foot, obviously indexing every year, but we're talking in 2014 dollars at this point. So if you were to implement that exemption and charge $3.30 per square foot on a non-residential perspective, you'll see that once you get past that initial 2014 period, you're basically looking at a requirement to build $133,749 into your budget, either taxation, water, or wastewater perspective, to make up the difference going forward, or representing $668,745 over the 5-year forecast period, or over the 5-year bylaw period. So that is something that council has discussed in the past in providing a potential 50% non-residential bylaw exemption going forward. So the impact of that is provided for your consideration. In terms of next steps, today is for council to receive public input. We can consider any amendments to the bylaw and background study after today. Basically, what the process is that we'll issue an amendment report or an amendment to the DC report showing what has changed from the report today to what you eventually pass 2 weeks from now. That could be adding in an exemption, or it could be nothing at all, depending on what you decide today. If we determine that there's been a significant change, you could have a second public meeting. Based on our experience, it usually takes a spike in DC rates to require a second public meeting. If you're suggesting providing for an exemption or decreasing the rates, that typically does not warrant a second public meeting, but it's council's discretion to determine that.
Sure.
So basically you would have the background study and a possible amendment to the background study and a bylaw in front of you 2 weeks from today for potential approval. But before that, we need to get public input. That concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dan. Before we get public input, are there any questions of council to Dan at this time? Deputy Mayor Sutherland, followed by Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, the pages aren't numbered, so it's the commercial DC comparison, square foot of gross floor area. We are looking at, or we propose to go to the 660, which puts us the top in all of Essex County. What would be the ramifications if we stayed at a lower rate, than, like somewhere in the middle between 584 and $4, for lack of a better number? I'm trying to rationalize that understanding.
As an example, that scenario that council has dealt with in the past of potentially providing a 50% exemption, that would mean that your rate would no longer be $6.60, it would be $3.30, which would put you more in the middle of the pack of that survey. So it may make you more competitive from a non-residential development perspective, but that means you have that additional funding source to come up with that the difference between the $6.60 and the 330. You'd have to come up with that additional funding source from other funding sources.
Follow up, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. So in your expert opinion, do you feel that going to the 660 is not going to deter development from coming in here in non-residential or commercial? Would that deter people from doing that?
I guess that's more of a philosophical question, in that I'm sure there will be some deterrent take place because you would be the highest in the area. But you have basically, what it comes down to is, do you want development to pay for development, or do you want to provide a break and entice development to come to your community? And if you do that, it obviously comes at a cost.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you. Yes, my question was on the same vein as that. Just the shock of going from the very bottom to the very top may not be a lot of money, but it may be a shocker to just, unless the areas that the area that we're providing is so much more enticing to want to invest in, that people would, you know, the investors would do it anyway. I'm just wondering about that phase-in, maybe a little bit more aggressive than 50%, so it starts us out in the middle of the road and works our way up as we see the response from the investors who say, well, I was going to come anyways. As Rebecca has sometimes said, I didn't know I wasn't going to pay it. So it's a fine dance, but for some it's a lot of money. The second question I had in relationship to the residential, you can have, I'm thinking of affordable housing. Some of those can be municipally owned, or a church building or a religious group building a residence or a service agency, or it can be a for-profit investor who just provides a not-for-profit or affordable housing. Would those two have a different charge rate, or could you do different for the, if it was an investor who said, I'm going to build an apartment building and it'll be for affordable, versus a church or the Lions Club or the Rotary Club to build an apartment?
The way it's currently stipulated, anything with respect to places of worship or not-for-profit would be exempt from development charges completely. In terms of how that would actually be rolled out in terms of identifying profit versus not-for-profit, maybe Rebecca would want to speak to that.
Thank you, Mayor. The other part of your question, which was about providing maybe a bit of relief or exemption for affordable housing, that's not presently part of the recommendations. However, the county official plan that was just approved by the province does recommend municipalities consider development charge exemptions and reductions for affordable housing. So not about it being, you know, a church group or a profit or not profit, but affordable housing in general. So that is a recommendation in the county official plan policies, and we'll have to see how all of the municipalities deal with that. We have not built that into our policies at this point.
And just a quick clarification, would that, if it were an investor who wanted to do that, would it be, are they talking about a complete exemption or a partial exemption?
We don't have that built in at all at this point, but it could be whatever makes sense, actually.
Councilor Peel.
Thank you. I got about three questions. I also touch on this last question that was asked. If we exempt a church DC charges, are you saying that we have to make it up somehow? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that comes now off of that question, go to Justin. How do we make that up?
Well, like you said, it has to come through either general tax revenue or other funds like the gas tax fund or whatever. We have to make it up as the town. I'm thinking all of you guys are probably thinking the same question as me. What does that $658,000 over 5 years represent as far as increase in taxes? So I did some quick math. We got about $18 million in annual property tax revenue. So if you took that, that's a 1% increase in the property tax rate over the next 5 years to make that difference up, just based on some quick math I did here. So I'm sure you're all thinking, How does that impact the tax rate? That's how it impacts the tax rate. The tax rate would have to go up by about 1% per annum to cover it.
And a follow-up on my third question. Why, I'm looking at the DC comparison sheet, 14 and 13. Why is 660 the token number when other municipalities have Lakeshore is 255? Why are we jumping right to 660? You may have said it at the beginning of that presentation, and I didn't get it in here.
Okay. No. The calculation of the charge is based on what are the capital growth-related needs identified by staff, and compare that to the growth projections for the town. So it's not a matter of picking a number that's in line with other municipalities. It's actually calculating a charge based on if you have a certain amount of anticipated non-residential growth within the town, how much do you have to charge on a per square foot basis to recover all the growth-related needs? And that just happened to be the number that we came up with after doing the calculation.
Follow up on it. So that means that 660 is our figure. We can't change it. If we change it, go with a reduction, we have to make it up some other form. That's interesting.
Councilor DePasquale. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Councilor, go ahead.
This is just obviously a projection too. If we don't sell 110 houses in one year, we won't meet that criteria. We have to play within, you know, the means of what we actually get in. This is a best estimate, but it really does depend on actual development of the town, so we have to keep that in mind as well.
Councilor Deacon Squad.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Who are you?
Dan.
I may be ahead of projects that have been started already. Like, do we have anything in place to deal with that situation?
Are you talking about development projects? At this point in time, the way the bylaw is written, once you hit that November 9th date, you would go from your current rates to the new rates, regardless of where people are in the process. If you wanted to have a phase-in period, like some of the potential examples that we provided on that one slide, that would, in a sense, try to alleviate the fact that you have some applications currently in place and you may not want to increase the rate on them. But that would be a form of phase-in or exemption that would have to be funded by some other way.
Thank you. Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor, but Rebecca wanted to respond first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Just the calculations, when we undertook each of the calculations for each of the capital projects, there is a benefit to existing growth that has to be removed. So, Councillor DePasquale, to answer your question, if some of that project is underway and is allocated benefiting existing growth, we had to reduce it by that amount. So there was that discussion about how much was benefiting the existing growth versus the future growth. Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst, through you to Dan. Based on Councillor Davies' questions and Deputy Mayor Sutherland's questions regarding the phase-in or the exemption implications, in the past, since 2009, the developers have really benefited by that previous bylaw, right? Because they were exempt. They did not have to pay development charges, correct? Am I correct?
That is correct, yes.
So therefore, the taxpayers of Amherstburg had to pay, make up the difference. So if we allow them another, you know, phasing in, or an exemption, we're adding an additional burden to the taxpayers. I mean, they've already been burdened for the past 5 years, and now we're going to add that, because that's the only way we can make it up is through taxation or through wastewater rates or water rates.
That is correct. So up until this point, we know for sure at least the last two bylaw terms, there has been no non-residential DCs. which means that anything that could have potentially been paid for by non-residential DCs were paid for by other sources. So the way the bylaw currently stands, the proposed bylaw, is that you would completely eliminate that exemption and have a full charge for non-residential. But if you did decide to do a phase-in or an exemption, that would be an additional cost that either taxation dollars, water rates, wastewater rates would probably have to recover. Yes?
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, and Dan, you touched on that in terms of the whole idea of bonusing. It's a hot topic right now because I know chambers across the province are asking municipalities and the province to engage in those discussions so we can deal with this issue effectively. Because, I mean, let's face it, we're talking about a global scale now where countries are actively recruiting businesses and offering bonuses to lure them there. And you know, Councillor Pilon touched on it. Why are these other communities offering lower rates? Because they're not charging full cost recovery. That's why. They're allowing some of that to attract new development. So that's really the question that we have to ask ourselves. Do we want to attract new business and new investment by offering some type of either a phase-in or a lower level of development charge? Or do we want to charge the full bore and risk losing that potential development? It's not an easy question to answer because nobody has that crystal ball up in front of them, but I'll be very interested from hearing those in attendance tonight exactly what their opinions are before we actually get moving to the bylaw stage and confirmation. But it's a very ticklish issue, make no doubt about that.
Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. Yes, and certainly I'm aware that many years ago, developers did pay rates on any of their work, and for some reason over the decades, they, you know, in competition, municipalities slowly lowered it in the hopes that it would bring in more people. We're all in the same competitive game of trying to attract investors. So and we were talking about risk management. What is the risk? And I realize it's a little bit hypothetical, but what is the risk of really trying to truly recover what we need to recover so that the taxpayer isn't burdened by the growth that we know is coming and we're intending to have happen? What is the risk of losing the investors? And I'll just do an addendum to that. Are there features of our particular community that with this rate that would attract investors greater than some of our other touching sister communities?
I can touch on the first question. In terms of a risk of charging the full rates, obviously it could result in less development within the community, which results in less tax dollars, which impacts the town as a whole, right? Less business in the community could result in attracting less residential growth as well. When it comes to attractions within the town itself, is that something you want to talk about?
Thank you, Mayor. Certainly, Amherstburg is located closer to the proximity to the border and some of the highways than other communities, but I think that probably education and occupation abilities would probably be pretty similar to the other municipalities. So nothing comes to mind particularly that centers us out or makes us unique to attract folks at the 660 rate. Now, something I do want to draw council's attention to, a letter that was received from one of our developers, and I sent it for council's information this morning, from the Joster House Group. These folks have purchased some property in town, a few properties in town, and they're asking for consideration because they've already now got tenants and they've already done the costing for their project, and they are identifying it's going to cause them difficulties if there isn't a phase in and we go to an immediate 660. So that letter was sent for council's information this morning, and I do have copies of it, but right on the same topic, they are asking for that consideration since they've already done all their costing for the project.
Councillor Davies.
And that was one of my other questions, is the grandparenting, if somebody's already into a project, because they will have already set their budgets based on, and their projections based on what they thought it would cost them to build. So it's a catch-22, because if we do the rate straight away, yes, I agree that, you know, our tax payer will be suffering, but at the same time, our taxpayer may suffer if there aren't more builds occurring at least some rate where we get some taxes from them, but immediately not the full measure, because we don't want to lose them either. So it really is a catch-22.
Yeah.
But it's been, you've got to understand, you're looking at a tax base, and that's a significant thing that you have to really give consideration to. Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. And through you to Rebecca, my computer was down for most of the day, but I wasn't able to view the letter as much as I wanted to, but saying that, is this group, have they already obtained their permit? Have they submitted their site plan agreement? And are they shovel ready and ready to go right as we speak? Or by the date that we would pass this bylaw?
This group are still negotiating with tenants, but they've now costed the project out. At the understanding that the DC is for non-residential, were zero, but it would probably help them if we went with a phase-in period. I think they're moving closer. They haven't gone through site plan control yet or application for building permit.
If there's no other questions, I think now's the opportunity to get public input. We've got, who is it? Jim Broderick. He's got... Yeah, that's you.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, I put in an application to be a delegate to speak tonight, and a couple of points, I think, just from the previous speaker, and looking at some of the items there, and in my humble opinion, first of all, the 660 a square foot is, I think, is out of this world. I think it's a tremendous cost, and I would like to see, from Watson and Company, Watson and Company, because of what you said about the capital growth needs have been put up by our staff, and gross needs of the total town. I would think that what is required on that item alone is a need for a factual example of a. And I'm just picking something out. I don't know a lot about square foot, but if we did a 50,000 square foot building, I'm not sure if that's big or small, at 660, at 350, or three, whatever it's going to be, and take a look at that and bring that item back to a council, whatever it takes, to give an idea of what does that mean? How much money does that mean? Now, I've talked to a few developers today, and they looked at the 660 and said, that is putting us at way out of touch with what we can do in our community. That's what they said. Now, if that is a fact, then let's get some facts in front of us so that we know exactly what the costs are at $6.60 or $3.30, whatever it's going to be. I don't think a decision can be made without having that information in front of us. The second part is, to as far as attracting new development, and I'll go right into my presentation. And I have a presentation that I've circulated to everybody. Does everybody have a copy? If they don't have one, I'll give you one. Anybody else need one, sir? Need one? Now, I'm a resident of Amherstburg. And I've taken a very serious look at this in the last 6 weeks. I spent a lot of time on it. And I started off this and looking at the first thing about development charge exemptions at my top page, mark zero.
In effect, it's a loss of revenue to the town, which will have to be funded via taxes, rates, taxes, increased rates, reserves, and other financial resources. And the act is specific in saying that you can't make this up from other classes of development. And it's a truism. That's exactly what it is. And we can't use residential to pay for non-residential and that kind of thing. On number A, in looking at that, this is an article out of the Windsor Star. And it really tells, I think, something about it, about what is happening when you start talking about development rates and development for builders. And yes, if we put it all the way up, that's what the town wants to do. Yes, it could have a negative effect, but at the same time, there's some information in the article itself that says, you know, it's not necessarily that it's going to have a negative effect on what we're doing in the community. Now, over on the side is the last table that was presented, where it said a grand total on the left-hand side, urban area, 12,666. Yet in the presentation by Mr. Wilson, he came up with a new figure of $13,120, including the educational dollars. And I wondered, does that figure have to be changed from what's on this piece of paper that's a handout?
No, it does not have to be changed. The 12,666 represents the town's share of the development charge, and the additional is the education component that is charged by the school board.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's still there. Thank you. And that's enough on this one. I think it's a matter of reading it and looking at what can we do to make the town more livable, both for people coming into the town as residents and non-residents get more development here. Now, development charges, the five-year review on B1, pages 1 and 2. There's two things that I've done there, and I'll go to the bottom first. And I want to know about these Development Charges Act and the fact that going way back when, 145 exempt dwelling units, 100 dwelling units have already been exempt from payment. And that goes back to, I guess, 2002. Now, if that's the case, then here's an item that's about $1 million from what I can figure out, $1 million in development charges that were never done back when Bablo, and I'll call it Bablo North, started to build. So it was $1 million that sort of disappeared at that point. Now, having said that, when I look at the top of the page then, and this is the important part, development charges, five-year review, background study, and proposed bylaw. Is there a procedure in place, bylaw of the corporation, for development charges exemption that has to be followed when considering an exemption? And I don't think there is. In looking at the documents, I don't think there's a real actual procedure that says, here's the steps that we have to do when somebody requests, as an example, if somebody makes a request to Rebecca, possibility, and they want an exemption, then what happens next? So what I'm saying here is exemption request made to the planning department. Reason for the request. Then a bylaw exemption request submitted to planning, then submitted to council for consideration based on recommendation of planning department. Exemption request placed on council agenda for debate, approval, or otherwise. At least it starts giving council, in my opinion, some control over what these items are. And the reason in the background is we have reviewed newspaper articles and other town documents. It's not clear what the procedure is for exemption if applied for and given. What is the approval process and how can we make that a little bit better? I feel that process possibly can be worked into the document, into the bylaw, proposed bylaw, before it's approved on the 22nd of this month. Go to number C, development charges, September 8th, as of today. Summary development charges, residential, non-residential. And do you mind if I just go through that, Mr. Mayor, to read that down?
No.
Thank you. Residential charges, this item has been thoroughly...
Go ahead.
This is very rude. Recommendation number one, council consider a reduced development charge for residential units of $9,999.99, picking something out that sounded nice, as an incentive for developers to open shop in Amherstburg. We can build this reduced rate, announcing Amherstburg is a great place to live, to retire, and raise your family. One item. Now, that means it's $3,000 less if it's $12,000. $12,666, it comes down to $9,000 or $10,000, so there's a reduction. Just picking something out of the air and saying it is less so that we don't get to the top of the list. Non-residential charges. Currently, there's no non-residential or commercial industrial charges, and this item should be open for discussion. This is an interesting one. Of the people that I've talked to in the community and just capital people didn't even know. They didn't know the fact that we did not have these charges in our community. There's a lot of information on the value of reduced development charges, and we should be looking at a return on our investment. And that's what that article in the Windsor Star said. Look at what can we get back. Currently, our return is zero, and council should have an option to discuss any development being considered. Under the current policy, there is no option. It's either we adopt this new 6.6 or 3.3, whatever it's going to be, or we stick with what we have. Now, I have spoken to several developers and realtors, and they agree with me that a minimum amount development charge would be appropriate. And I'm suggesting $5,000. Perhaps the developer and realtors could be surveyed for this input. Current data states that we have had 60 housing starts in 2014, with building permit fees approximately $200,000. And that's a report that I believe is going to be coming out very, very shortly. As you know, any surplus at the end of the year can be used in the next year. Our building department pays its own way with funds provided by building permits. We have also had 12 industrial commercial permits issued during this first part of this year. And if you apply that $5,000 as an amount, this could have resulted in $60,000 for the town to use. Every bit helps. Number three, D is strictly the bottom line there that says the DC bylaw provides non-statutory exemption for non-residential use. Now, this is the other one about past deals negatively on our town. And this is an item that said in an agreement here in the community about Seasons Amherstburg, and it says that the developer would have paid $929,000 with approved housing interpretation, the developer paid only $63,000 in development charges. So what? This happened. This is back there. But the point being that when you look at it and you say, number one, why? And here's money that we have to make up again. It's got to be made up someplace. F. We look at the town of Amherstburg and the discount development charges reserve balances as of December 31st, 2013, under F. And you look down the list, and now we've got in this reserve $3,793.27 on December 31st of 2013. Fine. So I'm asking if this next couple of figures can be produced where March 1st, 2014, a quarter balance, balance as of June 30th, that should be June 30th, and then July, August, and then actually September the 8th, today's date. What is the balance in our reserve? What do we have? Can somebody give us an answer tonight? If it's there, Mr. Mayor, yes, sir.
The current balance in the reserve accounts for accounting purposes, not actual cash balance, is $4.3 million. There's actually $1.2 million in cash there. The difference is due from the operating account of the town of Amherstburg as of August 18, 2014.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if it's $1.2 million in cash that we have in the account, then the other dollars difference between 4.3 and 1.2 have been used in other areas of our town, in other areas of our operation. Is that a fair statement?
Well, that is a correct statement. The thing about the development charge reserve account, and it's something the finance department is working on. We're working on a full reconciliation of that account going back to 2002 to make sure that those numbers are correct. What can occur is money can be transferred from that bank account for legitimate capital projects. However, if not relieved for accounting purposes, that money remains as a due to, due from the town's intercompany accounts. So we are working on making sure that those numbers are 100% correct, and we're working back to 02. Someone in the finance department is up to 2007 okay. on that. So as soon as that's rectified, you'll see that in the next financial statements of the town.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, that it gives us, I think should give everybody some concern of the dollars being taken out of one account, put in another account. I mean, that's your prerogative. That's what you people do, and that's fine. But when you look at it from this point of view, there's $3 million there that was taken out, used, and now it's got to be put back, and where does it come from? Where's the next dollars come from? The next item, G, exemptions, again, is just saying that the DC bylaw provides for non-statutory exemption of all non-residential uses, and that's fine. I've already said this one about the, in effect, is loss of town revenue, H, and then I is just a strictly information document that says non-residential use means a building or structure of any kind whatsoever used, designed, or intended to be used for other than a residential use, and then the residential dwelling. Mr. Mayor, I'd like to thank you and thank Council for seeing this. I put, a very concerted effort into putting a package together. A lot of the residents out there are concerned, and there's a lot of dollars on the table right now, and I think in conclusion that 660 deal is a real tough one to take a look at. That's a lot of dollars, and I'd like to see some kind of a, as I said, a report on, and maybe 50,000 square feet is not proper, but something.
Thank you.
I have one question I have of Dan Wilson. And he said there was a non-resident change of 40%, water, wastewater, and transportation. What did you mean by that when you made that comment? Non-resident change, charge, I'm sorry, a non-resident charge of 40%. That makes, I didn't get exactly where it was. Anyway, I just asked the question. Maybe we can look at it later. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your opinion. Any questions? If I can answer, I would do it.
Rebecca, you got something you want?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I wanted to respond, if that's okay
sure,
with you, regarding some
please.
Of the comments that
please.
Mr. Broderick made. And I apologize. I did just receive this right when I was walking in, so otherwise I would have had something more formal prepared. But there was a comment that $1 million was lost on what was described as Boblo North. And I just want to read you a couple of sentences out of the current development charges study from 2009. And it states, although once under private ownership, the Boblo Island Pollution Control Plant is now part of the Amherstburg Sewage Treatment System. When the town acquired it, the additional capacity at the plant was approximately 145 households. A development agreement is currently in place which specifies any development in excess of the 145 units will be subject to a new development agreement which shall include the provisions for development charges in accordance with the town's development charges bylaw. So that's explaining exactly why there's 145 exemptions. It's because the previous owner paid for and built the plant.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, and I agree with you 100%.
But it's important to understand that, and you make it very clear.
There was another comment
sure.
about the request for exemptions and it coming to the planning department and a proper process. And the proper process would be that it come forward for council's consideration, certainly. But in fact, the current bylaw for your consideration is recommending there not be these one-offs for consideration because that would constitute bonusing.
So it is recommended that there not even be that allowance, that we can have these individual requests. There was also a comment that the residential rate should be $5,000 to make it more...
Non-residential.
$5,000 for the residential, recommended residential rate, you said?
No, non-residential.
Okay.
Non-residential.
Regarding the comment about Seasons Retirement Home and the article relating to Seasons, at the time, it appears to me at the time when that development charge was figured out, that's a retirement home. And there were two ends of what the development charge could be. It could be institutional or it could be retirement home, kind of like individual units. And so at that time, there wasn't clarity, I think, in the development charges, the previous development charges bylaw for those forms of use and how to apply the DCs. That is something that we've raised with the consultant this time, and we've got all clear definitions so that there's absolute clarity when you charge development charges.
Sure.
So that's all I have.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, Councilor Pucci.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. I just wanted to thank Mr. Broderick for bringing his concerns to council, and he certainly has done a lot of work on this. I just have a question regarding something that Mr. Broderick brought up, and Justin, I really didn't hear exactly what you said. When Mr. Broderick was referring to the reserve fund balance, what was the reserve fund balance right at this time?
Sure, I'll take you through that again. The reserve fund balance, though his numbers were close, they were a little bit different than the financial statements that ended at the end of December 2013. That number would have been 3.9 million. Do you just want me to keep it pretty general like that, or do you want actual complete figures? Since that point in 2014, we have collected $400,000 of development charges for the year, which brings us to a total balance in the reserve accounts, the equity reserves, not cash reserves, of $4.3 million. Now, the cash equivalent that we have in a bank account is $1.25 million. So there is a shortfall there. Now, like I explained to Mr. Broderick, there is a difference between the cash reserve balance and the equity reserve balance. So what can happen over time is you can have a capital project that should have been relieved by development charges. A journal entry should have been made to clear that. In the past, what had occurred was transfers of funds to the operating funds to pay for what we believe to be capital projects, but we have to go back and reconcile all of that back to 2002 to make sure that was done correctly. Now, the reason this did not come up in the audits or any of these type of things is because it's basically an inter-fund reconciliation upon consolidation of the town's financial statements. I just talked a lot of accounting there, I'm sorry. But it just means that the two numbers balance. There's a due from the town of Amherstburg's reserve account to the town of Amherstburg's operating fund account. So do you guys follow that?
Yes.
So as a point of clarification, right now, in an account for DC charges, we have $1.25 million.
That is correct. In a bank account, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Have you anything else to respond to relative to the DC? This gentleman from the public, go ahead. State your name, please, and come on up.
Good evening, Mayor Hurst, members of council. My name is Rob Filipov. I'm with Amoco Properties. We have the report, and quite simply, we just want to review the report, and should we have any issues or comments as with respect to Bob Lewis or whatnot, that we'll provide our comments in writing.
Sure. Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate it. Okay. Norbert, if you would.
Mayor, Council, Norman Holger from Norville Construction, Great Lakes Properties, the Red Properties. Same thing, I think my report's still printing. I just got it today, I saw it on the website, so we'd like to review it. I'd just like to tell council in that report, I'm sure, it has certain things about, we'll say, needs of the community, but some of those may be wants as well. And we need to find the difference between the needs and wants of the cost of it. Like we, and I haven't read it, I was in one of the other meetings, and there's some talk about adding additional police and fire and different things. So without seeing the actual report now, I don't want to comment on that, but we have to see what our actual needs are compared to wants. So I suggest we go through that entire report, you know, in detail and look at that. As far as my take on development charges, nobody'd like them reduced more than myself, except for actually the homeowner, because that's actually who ends up paying for it. When we figure out the cost of a house, we take the development charge we added on, and that's the cost of the house. In saying that, the more homes we build, the more taxes we bring in, the more development charges we're going to pay. The less development charges we have to pay, the more homes we're going to build, the more taxes we're going to bring in. It's kind of a catch-22. We just have to figure out what is going to be the right thing. We know we have to pay development charges. It's part of it. We just want to make sure it's fair for everybody, because at the end of the day, that's who pays for it is the homeowner. So, thank you. And again, I'll review the report and look through it and talk to councilor for something.
Thank you. Councilor Pouget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst, and thank you to the two previous speakers. But just a question through you, Mayor Hurst, to Rebecca. What is the final date that these two gentlemen have to have their submission in? Because I understand we're going to be reviewing this or passing it on September 22nd. Is that correct? So it doesn't leave them too much time.
Thank you, Mayor. I agree. It is proposed to go for council for consideration for adoption on the 22nd. And considering our timelines for the preparation of reports, really just as soon as possible for their comments to come forward.
Thank you, Rebecca. Okay. Councilor Pilo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in consideration of the public input and with a couple submissions coming in, would it be possible we back this up for another council meeting into
what you might want to do then is ask the two presenters from
if Amico they have sufficient time
and sure Norbert if they have sufficient time to get it read and then put through. I think that's the question we would ask them. Have you got Rod, have you found it to be sufficient time to read this report and then respond back in writing?
For myself, we're going to consult with administration and
sure.
A few scholarships that we have.
Okay. What about you, Norbert?
I haven't had a chance to read it. Like I said, I think it's 138 pages long. I will be looking at it over the next few days.
Okay.
So September 22nd, okay?
Pardon me?
The question is September 22nd, okay?
Date okay for you, Norbert?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll make sure.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that completes the discussion. We've got the recommendation on the study itself. It's Council's pleasure. Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the report from the Manager of Planning Services dated August 22nd. That can't be honest.
Yeah, just keep reading.
August 22nd, 2014, regarding development charges, background study, and bylaw be received for information. And council accept the recommendations contained within development charges study dated August 25th, 14, from Watson and Associates Limited, and pending comments received at the public meeting scheduled for September the 8th today. Council consider adoption of the proposed development charges study and bylaw at the council meeting scheduled for September 22nd.
Okay. Is there a supporter for that? Councilor Davies supports that motion. We've had ample discussion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. I will then, of course, entertain a motion to adjourn. Councilor Davies, supported by Councilor Peel, all in favor. Motion is carried. Have a nice evening, everyone. Jump up fast. Where did you go?